It is a very good afternoon. It's Niall Boylan. What an interesting day it's been. What an interesting 24 hours it's been. Wow. Who would have known? We've essentially had four Taoiseachs over the last 4 years, including Leo Varadkar twice. We could have had Eamon Ryan. It could have been a lot worse, couldn't it? But Simon Harris, of course, is the new Taoiseach of Ireland. A lot of people not very happy, by the way, the fact that he left Helen McEntee as Minister for Justice. That's a bit of a red flag. And some people are suggesting, including Padraig Tobin, that this could be the shortest reign or the shortest term of office for any Taoiseach in Ireland if it continues the way it's going. He did say at the Ardèche last week that they were listening. This was the new energy they have. They're now listening to the people. But if they're listening to the people, why is Helen McEntee still the Minister for Justice when she's been involved in culture wars for the last 3 or 4 years and not making Ireland safe? Because that's really what she's supposed to be doing. She's a justice minister. She needs to make sure that people go to jail for the right amount of time, the judges are doing a good job, the Garda Síochán are doing a good job, and our streets are safe. She says they're safe, but are they really? Anyway, one of the big stories today, of course, is the EU Migration Pact. That will be voted today in the European Union by European MEPs that you elect here in Ireland, by the way. Don't forget the elections are coming up again in June, on June the 7th. So make sure, by the way, you think hard, long and hard about who you're going to vote for, because remember, they represent you in Europe. But reading from RTE here, and I want to just read it just to give you an idea, because a lot of people are quite confused about it, because everybody is saying opt out, but they're saying opt out for different reasons. This is the confusing part. So you've got those on the right who are saying opt out, for example, and the reason they want to opt out is because they want to keep control of our sovereignty, our laws and legislation when it comes around immigration. But then you've got those on the left who are saying opt out as well. But they're opting out for a different reason, because they don't want any screening. They don't really want any borders, and they just want a free-for-all. And according to RTE, MEPs will vote on the package of new laws on migration, known as the new Pact on Migration and Asylum, or the EU Migration Pact, agreed by EU member states in December, and amid pressure from the far-right parties, according to RTE, the pact took several years to negotiate. European elections in June will likely be shaped by the migration issue, meaning the EU is eager to get the pact across the finish line. If enacted, the pact will make it easier for member states to limit the number of migrants who enter the European Union, giving them stronger mechanisms to deal with the asylum applications. And that's the way it's being sold to us, of course. In lieu of accepting migrants into their own territory, it would also give countries the option of making financial contributions or providing support to other member states. In other words, if we turn people away and send them back to another safe country, we have to pay. That amount of money hasn't been really decided yet, but somewhere around €25,000 per person per year, from what I'm aware of. Through the pact, five laws are expected to be approved by a slim majority in the European Parliament, and human rights groups and parties on the left have warned they will weaken protection systems for asylum applications. Far-right parties, on the other hand, have criticised the new mechanisms, calling them an ineffective smokescreen. And migrant charities and non-governmental organisations, or NGOs as we better know them, have also come out against the pact, seeing it as a bid to buttress fortress Europe and make it much harder for refugees to seek protection. You might be still confused about it. A lot of people are. But I want to know what you think of it today. Should we be voting for it? Do we need an EU migration pact? Should we keep doing what we're doing? Or should we be bringing in or enforcing our immigration laws as they stand at the moment? Because I saw an article in the Irish Business Post during the week, and Helen McEntee points out that, you know, when we sign up to the EU Migration Pact in 2025, for example, we will have reception centres near Dublin Airport with fast-track processing for those who should be coming in and those who shouldn't being deported. And I go, that's great. That sounds like a good deal, doesn't it? But we should be doing that already. Why aren't we doing that right now? Isn't that the argument? We don't need an EU Migration Pact to tell us that, although she will argue legally we do. I want to know what you think. The number, as usual, if you want to get in contact with us, is 085-122-55. That's 085-122-55. Senator Sharon Keoghan joins me on the line. Sharon, good afternoon to you. Sharon, this is a complicated situation because no matter what way you look at it, it looks like a bad idea.
Absolutely. This is something that every person in this country should be very wide awake in relation to, and I'm not surprised this government is trying to sneak it in as quickly as they can and try and deal with it swiftly. And like you said, this could be the shortest lived government in the history of the state and the shortest lived Taoiseach in the history of the state. And this immigration pact will probably be what it will actually cause the downfall of this government.
But if it's not this one, it'll certainly be the hate speech laws. But
the hate speech bit as well as down the line.
That's another one coming first. Okay, but in relation to this pact, they're kind of selling it as this attractive idea that we will have more control in the fact that we can refuse more people and we can just give a donation or a contribution to countries like Greece and Italy to deal with migration at their borders. So they're kind of selling it to us as this nice idea that we'll have fast processing, fingerprinting, screening, all the things we've been calling for the last year. But we lose control of all that and Europe controls it now. So that's the way it's been sold to us, which kind of sounds like a good deal from the outset, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, look, this is what I want processing centres. I want a fast-tracked process for illegal immigrants that are coming into this country and refugees that are seeking asylum here. I want that. And every person in this country wants that. However, we do not need to be told by Europe in how to control our borders. We have the capabilities of doing it ourselves. But at this moment in time, the Department of Justice are asleep at the wheel when it comes to controlling our borders. Let's just take one aspect. I want to talk to you about the Dublin 3 regulation. So that basically means that if an asylum seeker has gone to a previous country and sought asylum there and then makes their way to Ireland and seeks asylum in Ireland, under that Dublin 3 regulation, we're allowed to ask that country where he first sought asylum in, to take that person back.
But isn't there now a problem with that, Sharon? That, and I know this was argued when Leo Varadkar said that was untrue to Grip Media, but Grip Media then got an immigration lawyer on to say that it was true. So there's a huge argument whether that's true or not, or whether it's legal or whether it's not legal. I believe
it is legal.
Yeah, I believe you. No,
legal.
I know. I believe it is.
It is legal. But it is legal.
But here's the problem: did the High Court not decide 3 weeks ago when a man who came from the UK to Ireland and was being removed from Ireland back to the UK again, he took a case against the state to say that the UK wasn't a safe port or couldn't be designated as a safe port. Because indeed, I don't think he was coming from Birmingham or somewhere like that. Because his fear was that if he went back to the UK, he could be sent to Rwanda, which would be inhumane in his eyes. And the court agreed. And does that not cause a problem then for us? Because most of these people who are second country people are coming from the United Kingdom through Northern Ireland, possibly.
They're coming through Ireland, yes. I pointed that out before.
So they are now going to claim, well, you can't send me back to the UK because if you send me back there, my life is in danger because I'll be sent to Rwanda. And that's the fear, and that's what the High Court here decided going back about 2 or 3 weeks ago. That was one of the cases in the High Court. That's problematic for us, isn't it?
Well, that is why I suppose really we need to get in control of our own immigration legislation within this country. And Denmark have opted out of this EU Migration Pact. They we can do the same. Mm-hmm. So do we have a list of safe countries at this moment? By the way, the number of people who were sent back in 2022 under that Dublin 3 regulation was 3. Now, how many do you think are going to be sent back under this new EU Migration Pact? There'll be nobody. These reception centres, what people don't understand, these reception centres, and by the way, they haven't exactly said how many they're going to be building, but if you're looking at Catherine Day, she made a report to the Department of Children, Equality, Disability, Integration and Youth back in 2022, and she said that Ireland needed 6 to 8 more reception centres.
Each one holding 800 people or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, yeah. Hold on a second. But these new ones, they hold 13,000 people. The new reception centres that hold up to 13,000 people. Now, under the EU Migration Pact, it is stated that those centres must be vacated after 12 weeks. According to a document that he brought out the other day, Robert McGowan brought out the other day, that the people will be allowed to stay there for 6 months. So already they're making up the rules as they go along in relation to this. Now,
but all we're doing is going back to direct provision again. I mean, that's all it is.
And don't forget, we already have 26,000 people in direct provision in this country. This is an additional 13,000 in each of these centres that they're going to be putting up as well. They came up with a document the other day. I'm not too sure whether you've actually seen that.
I've seen the document here, yes. Going
to, yeah, exactly. So in community accommodation for vulnerable persons, up to 1,000 bed capacity. That's a state-owned, operated in partnerships with NGOs. wonderful. Another NGO at Gravy Train. Contingency accommodation at national standards, up to 11,000. So these are commercial providers. Now, these are basically, you know, ones that are not run by the state. But the reception centres are run by the state, but the ones that are not going, these are contingency ones, and they hold up to 11,000 people. And then emergency accommodation.
I mean, there's a lot of people, making a lot of money. Providers. I mean, we spoke to
There's over 500 housing agencies in this country. 500. And we have over 14,000 people homeless in this country. Now, somebody needs to get a hold of this situation. There's a lot of money being spent by this government, and a lot of people are profiting out of it. There's a lot of red tape. There's a lot of CEOs, there's lots of staff getting money, but where is that money filtering down to the people that need to be housed? So 500 housing agencies, 500, and we have 14,000 people homeless in this country. There's something seriously wrong with the system here. And social housing, there's only one agency for social housing in this country. There should be, and that should be with the local authorities. Unfortunately, you have housing agencies after housing agencies, you have various trusts that are out there trying to do the same job that the government and the local government should be doing for the people. So
are doing is making every crisis an industry. And that's what's happening in this country. Every crisis becomes an industry. We spoke to Neil Munro from Breitbart News, he was talking about the fact that, you know, immigration means huge money for investors, huge money for private companies. So, in other words, 2 or 3% of the population become really rich out of immigration, but the rest of us suffer because of it. Now, you know, the idea that the immigration pact is good for us, or this sell, the hard sell they're currently doing at the moment, you know, by 2026 is when it probably will be implemented. So that's another 2 years away anyway, right? God only knows what's going to happen between now and then. So that's another 2 years. Yeah. I find it difficult to believe. If the government are incapable of dealing with the problem now and, you know, and have the gumption to actually say to somebody, well, no, you don't qualify, you know, here's an Garda Síochána, take you off onto a bus back to Dublin Airport, back to where you came from, right? If we're incapable of doing that now, what makes us believe we're going to be capable of doing it if we sign a pact? Because we just the NGOs, as you've seen in the United Kingdom with the Rwanda plan, the NGOs in this country will stop them again, because the NGOs, ironically enough, are also voting against it. They think it's a bad idea, but for different reasons, because they don't want anybody being screened.
Absolutely. And also, this is our business. This is our business model. That's it. So the more refugees they have, the more jobs they have, the more money they have. So I really think that the people need to be very much wide awake to this. They have to look at their politicians. You know, the European elections are coming up. You need to find out, and every person needs to ask themselves, will my MEP vote for this particular pact going forward? Mm-hmm. And if they do, then do not give them a vote. End of story.
Are we aware of any of the current MEPs, the existing MEPs that are over there? I know most of them are actually over here, because the thing about
voting today.
Yeah, I know.
They're voting today.
Are they all going to be present? This is the thing. Because
I have no idea who's going to be present, and that's why you do need strong independent voices at European level. And I hope people do elect independents into the European Parliament. Mm. Now, whether they do or not, I have no idea, but it's entirely up to. Now, does that mean that we as a nation don't care about what's happening across the world? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. That's not, you know, we're a very caring nation. We're a very giving nation. We have always supported those in need. We stepped up here in 2022 when the Ukrainian crisis hit. Every community in this country stood up and said, yes, we do something. We all wanted to be part of that, and in general, all of those people that have come to our communities have integrated really, really well into our communities. Their children are in school; they're actively working in our towns and villages across this country. But there comes a time when you say, "Stop! Mm-hmm. We cannot do any more. The country is full." When you see 2,000 tents.
How dare you say that, Sharon? I mean, you've heard the government, you've heard Simon Harris saying he won't accept this term, Ireland is full. He just will not accept the term.
Maybe then all those tented people need to get down to wherever the Taoiseach of this country lives and start tenting outside. Because if you go up to Mount Street here, you can clearly see there's a couple of hundred, maybe 400 or 500 tents there. There's 2,000 allegedly in tents in this country. 2,000 in tents. Is that, are we setting the bar that low for people that need help? Is that where we're setting the bar? And is that where we're going to set the bar for our own Irish people that need help going forward? Because to me, that bar is far too low. So people need to wake up to this. We have to set a standard of what is acceptable accommodation for people. Giving them a sleeping bag and a tent is not the way forward. Ireland is full until we get a grip of our immigration issue, until we start providing housing for our own and housing for refugees and suitable accommodation. But if you look as well, the way they're going to do it, I'm just going to read something. 27, go back. Everyone, I want everyone to have a look at this.
This is the government's new comprehensive accommodation strategy for international protection applicants.
Absolutely. Yeah. Look, use of state land for prefab and modular units. These are basically going to be ghetto cities. Okay. Conversion of commercial buildings. Now, we all seen when COVID hit in 2020, commercial businesses were suffering in this country. A lot of them closing down. Business models changed and a lot of businesses were... commercial buildings were being empty. I suggested at the time, you know, a lot of companies were downsizing. I suggested at the time that all these buildings should be used, you know, and reused to revitalise our towns and villages and cities around the country and to use it for housing. Okay, I suggest that. So conversion of commercial buildings. But that could be done for Irish people and it could be done for everybody, not just refugees. Targeting purchase of medium and large key turnkey properties. Now, that to me is basically they're given permission for county councils to go out there and buy brand new housing estates to deal with the refugee status.
Meanwhile people have been on a waiting list for the last 15, 20 years in Ireland looking for a house.
Absolutely. The design and build of new reception and integration. I'm looking at integration. Mm-hmm. I'm calling it an interrogation centre because really that's what's really they're going to become. Yeah. They're going to become centres where basically everything will be done inside it. You will be catered for. Everything will be within. You'll have your school within the centres. These are big centres. These are not small centres that are going to be built. Everything is going to be within that campus, and your decision to stay or go will be made within those integration centres. By the way, yeah. they're saying they're not going to be available to the end of 2026. Now look at the damage that's going to be done between now and 2026. Also, if you remember when COVID hit, how Ireland was able to step up and to roll out the vaccine in this country. They were able to build whatever needs to be built. They were able to provide the accommodation and whatever was necessary to
vaccinate everybody
in this country. So they stepped up, and there's absolutely nothing to stop this government today from building a temporary reception centre, integration centre there near Dublin Airport, and indeed near all our ports. They need to be put in all our ports
and process people within a very reasonable amount of time.
Well, a reasonable amount of time to me is 7 days.
Yeah,
7 days is a reasonable amount of time. First of all, have they got the correct documentation? If they haven't got the correct documentation and they come here without documentation, they have to be sent back. And the airlines in this country must step up as well, because the airlines should be checking those passports as they're coming off the plane. Absolutely. Those passports should be checked. And if they turn up and they're after coming in a certain day, €1,500 is not enough to find an airline. Put that up to 15,000 and I guarantee you, every airline.
What is the airline's responsibility? If
50, they're fined.
I understand. But so let's say somebody, because nobody gets on a plane without identification, because so they must destroy it.
So if the airline is
checking the identification of people getting off the plane, and some guy comes off and he has no identification, no passport, what is their obligation from that point? Because that person, I assume, will immediately claim asylum.
Not necessarily.
So what's their obligation? Is their obligation to remove them?
If they don't immediately, at this moment, if they don't immediately seek asylum at that time, when they get off that plane, then they're not entitled to asylum. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because so the airline has an obligation to remove them from the stage.
Absolutely, yeah, exactly. But you don't, if they seek asylum once they're on Irish side, but if a fellow is here for 2, 3, 4 months and hasn't sought asylum, sorry, they're not entitled to asylum as far as. So, I mean, if you should be given X amount of time to seek, seek asylum.
Sharon, I'm running out of time, okay? So I think.
I know, sorry.
No, that's okay. I think we all agree the EU migration pact is a bad idea, right?
But it's a very bad idea. And also, what about all the unaccompanied minors that come into this country as well without any documentation? Those children are after being trafficked into this country. And
finally, just before you go, Sharon, there's a huge push at the moment. I saw a piece last night in the paper that they're designating the 30th of April as a day to promote, or for NGOs to promote migrants to vote in local elections, and people who have come into the country as asylum seekers, etc., etc. I've seen a huge backlash to this online. Do you believe that people who come into the country, say Ukrainians, people seeking international protection, whatever it is, do you think they should be allowed to vote in local elections?
I believe that everybody should, of course, I believe everybody should have a right to vote. In fact, actually, I believe it should be compulsory to vote. Mm. I think we should do the same as the Australians do, that if you don't vote, you get fined. Even if you turn up and rock up and spoil your vote and you don't want to vote for anybody.
And I would agree with you when it comes to Irish citizens. Yeah.
But Irish citizens, you believe that, so what I'm getting from you is that you believe that only Irish citizens should get to vote in any Irish election. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying to me?
I don't know, and I haven't thought about it deep enough. When it comes to presidential election, it doesn't really matter too much, right? When it comes to a referendum, I think it really matters a lot when it comes to general election. When it comes to local election, they're also important because we're setting the tone for the next 5 years.
Well, referendums they don't get that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying to you.
They don't get to vote at the EU elections. They do get now.
But do you think they should be allowed to vote?
I would not. I would never take a vote away from anybody. That's just me. I think everybody. That means we're saying you don't count. You don't have a say.
Yeah, but if it's somebody who's only here temporarily under an asylum application, they may not end up being allowed to stay. You know what I mean? But they're making a decision that affects the rest of us for the next 5 years, and they may not even understand this.
I get that, and I hear what you're saying. However, I mean, do I not, there's people that come into me every day of the week, and I'm sure they come into every politician around the country as well. And do I differentiate that person? Do I say, I'm sorry, I don't want to deal with you because you have...
No, I wouldn't suggest that for a minute.
That's what I'm saying. So for me and Niall, every voice is important.
Okay.
And I will probably get backlash for that, but that's because I believe every person has a right to a voice.
Okay, no, I accept that.
And to express that voice. And I don't see any difference because you have an Irish citizenship or somebody that's waiting to become a citizen, that they're a person of less worth. That's me personally.
That's okay, Sharon.
I might get a lot of backlash because of that. But I treat people as my equal, and it doesn't matter where they come from, what colour they are, what religion they are. I try and treat people as human beings. And I think we all should try and do that. But we also must be very aware of our own borders in relation to who we're letting in. There's nothing wrong with people coming in here, seeking entry to work in this country, coming in through the work permit system, being a good citizen, wanting to come and be a good citizen and work in our country and contributing to our country. And while we might be talking about centres that are going to house up to 13,000 people in each centre, there's no talk about where's the schools? Where's the schools for these people? Where's the roads? Where's the doctors? Where's the nurses? Okay. Where's the hospital things? So there's a lot of things there we are not set up.
We're making a Haynes of it, Sharon. It's reckless.
Even though we are one of the wealthiest nations in Europe. And that will affect how many refugees we take and how many asylum seekers we take as well.
Well, mind you, that's an inflated wealth. We obviously have all these multinationals.
We all know that because of multinational companies are here.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make any difference. They're looking at your bank balance. Okay. They're looking at what your GDP is. They're not looking at what we can do. They're not looking at our 2,000 people in tents in country. They're looking at your GDP. Oh, they can take them.
Okay, well, listen, Sharon, unfortunately, I've run right out of time. Listen, Sharon, I've gone probably over time as well.
Yeah, no problem. We could talk all day about this.
We could. Sharon, thank you very much indeed. Senator Sharon Keoghan. Let me go to Jackie. Jackie, hi, how are you? Sorry for keeping everybody waiting so long. Jackie, this EU migration pact, everybody disagrees with it for different reasons. What's the? I'm assuming you disagree with it, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I do. And just listening to Sharon there, and look, there's certain things I wouldn't agree with Sharon, and I wouldn't fall out with her over it either.
No, no, Sharon's a very good... I do like Sharon. I agree with most things she says.
Yeah, great
most.
Lady. Yeah. Great lady. Absolutely.
I think we could have a debate again about who should be allowed to vote, but... I mean, this
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, look,
I mean,
that's another.
I mean, like, if somebody's here waiting for citizenship, or if somebody's here and they've been accepted, you know, as an international protection applicant, or whatever, yeah, maybe, are they going to make their life in Ireland? That's fine. But if somebody's here on a temporary basis waiting for an application and they could be removed or they could be refused, I don't see why they should be allowed to vote. That doesn't make any sense to me. But that's. That's neither here. That's Sharon disagrees with me, obviously.
And look, I'd be kind of on the same thing, and I'd be kind of going, well, if they're working and they're here for a period of time,
absolutely,
then they have every right to. Mm. Yeah. And I think most people would kind of say that, but I'm always afraid of the control that the NGOs have over blocks of people. You know,
if you're talking about voting, NGOs could encourage people to vote in a certain way because a certain party are kind to migrants. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, yeah.
Or kinder.
Yeah.
Okay, kinder, but getting back to the EU Migration Pact. Okay, so they're selling it as this wonderful idea that we'll, you know, be able to refuse people and pay money instead.
Yeah, now, okay, look, should we rewind and say, right, so people are getting on a plane somewhere with passports coming over here, and we're kind of saying, right, now we have to deal with them because they've arrived in Dublin or Shannon, well, mainly Dublin or whatever. Now, should it be a case that these centres should be in the countries of origin so that we would have a designated area and people that would come to or would come to those areas and seek asylum in Ireland? This is before they get on any plane. Why is it a case that we have to deal with the problem? It arrives on our shores. And now
there are steps you could take, similar to, for example, American immigration is in Dublin Airport. So it's, say, they can refuse you there and then, so you don't even get to go to America. And I get the point you're making. And you could have one, but that would be a lot of centres. You'd be having to have them in every single country across Europe, leaving the country. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, but then we don't have to. It's dealt with there, and you're kind of getting rid of, and it can be, you know, where people are looked after, whatever, for the length of time until they're vetted and they go through the whole process, and then they come to Ireland. And then, you know, so...
But that still doesn't rid us, and I understand the point you're making, and I think it would streamline things a bit better, but that still doesn't rid us of the problem of, say, the vast amount of people who are coming into Ireland are coming in through Northern Ireland. They're coming in through the United Kingdom and through Northern Ireland.
Yes.
And, you know, that's going to be difficult to stop unless you physically have a bloke standing in the middle of the road with his hand up.
Yeah, no, just a couple of points, because I know you're going to run out of time. We go back to the Amsterdam Treaty and we go look at the Nice Treaty. Were we hoodwinked? Were we not told the full story or the implications, especially then in relation to the Nice Treaty, where we handed over our rights or whatever to our government to decide to opt in or opt out? We have no say.
We do have it. So here's the interesting point of this. We do have a say, right? And we can have a say, and we should have a say, because there's legislation involved in this. So there's been arguments to and from, you know, legal teams in relation to what the implications of this are. And because there's legislation involved from an Irish point of view to get this over the line eventually, it means that we could have a referendum. It's called an ordinary referendum. So in other words, it's not something that's constitutional.
Yeah.
So the president...
I've been reading about that. Yeah.
Okay, so if enough members of the Oireachtas, senators in the Oireachtas like Sharon Keoghan, sign a petition, send it to the president, at his discretion, he can call a referendum, which he should.
Yes, but again, my original point was, that's our senators, TDs or whatever, but not the people. We have no say.
No, we will. If it's a referendum, if they call a referendum, we will have a say. And we should have a say.
Not enough people know what is coming down the line here. And I was only talking to someone earlier on in town about this, and they had absolutely no knowledge because it's not in the mainstream media.
Well, it is complicated, you know, apart from anything else, and it's been sold by the government as something wonderful that's better than what we're doing at the moment. And let's be clear, anything is better than what we're doing at the moment. That sounds like a Hobson's choice, but we shouldn't be doing what we're doing at the moment. That's the point. We should be implementing immigration law in this country, which we're not. We've abandoned the laws of the country completely. I mean, Sharon pointed out that only 3 people had been deported. I mean, for, you know, entering the country legally with no documentation. I mean, that's stupid. That's pointless. You know what I mean?
Look, and the other thing here is just to throw a kind of a spanner in there as well. Like we listening to Eamon Ryan yesterday, and
I never listened to him.
Oh, look, it was comical. But look, so we're bringing in and possibly 30,000 minimum per year. You know, so this is the figures. And we're looking at climate footprint, which I think is a scam. But anyway, let's look at that. So we have climate footprints and we're looking at buying credits from other countries. But what we're doing is we're bringing in thousands of extra people to add to our footprint as well, which no one has kind of taken any heed of. So we're creating all this, what would you, we call it climate change or climate, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So we're adding to this already.
Okay, well, hang on, because I have loads of people to get through. Stay there with me, Jackie, if you want for a second. But I have to limit it now. I have to give everybody 2 or 3 minutes each. I'm sorry. John, hi, how are you?
I'm glad I put up a tricolour outside my house last night.
Good man.
And I'm proudly watching it blowing in the wind now.
I'm sure it's blowing today, all right. There's a good old wind out there today.
So I'd say Maliki will be delighted with me. I would encourage more people to do that, to actually make a personal commitment to backing our own personal sovereignty, right, because it's been trampled and all over. Now, this idea of that we can have I think we should have a permanent, completely opt-out, for the simple reason, this is a small country, an island, like, and there's way too many people after coming, and are still coming, and no one is still shouting stop, right?
Yep.
Now, as regards these new centres, all there will be is detention centres, that's all. There will be the new direct provision, right? And we'll say if there's 13,000 in them, how many is in them, whatever. The thing is that eventually, if you move those people out of that, the very fact that they're there, that we've gone down this road, they will be filled up by another 13,000. And if we, this idea that if we refuse people, we'll be fined up to 25,000.
But John, none of that is going to, this is all pie in the sky. None of that's going to happen because we've got NGOs in this country who will never, ever allow people to be kept in detention centres where they're not allowed to leave, similar to the United States.
But
right?
That's not going to happen.
You're absolutely right. But the NGOs, as Sharon rightly pointed out, they need them in the country. They need immigrants because for the NGOs, that makes money and that keeps them in business. There'll be no work for the NGOs if there was no illegal immigrants.
No, but this idea, like, we'll say if we refuse 50,000, right, at 25,000 per person we refuse, that's 1.2 billion straight away. How many social houses would that build?
Yeah.
And as regards voting, no way, unless you're a fully fledged Irish citizen, should be you allowed vote on anything.
I don't necessarily agree with the fully fledged Irish citizen part. There are people living in this country who are, say, British citizens or Spanish citizens, or I have a regular caller, she's Greek, and she's been living here for years. You know what I mean? So I have no problem with people from other countries voting in local elections, not general elections, local elections.
If you're part of the European family, like, but the whole thing about us, we all know who's coming here now, and they're not part of Europe, a hell of a lot of them, right? And there's no way, like, it would suit the people who are profiting all the mother gobshites, like, I mean, if they voted, of course, for them. But we must stop this and we must stop it now. We must reclaim our own country and our own sovereignty and say no, 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 no.
Mm. So what's going to happen, John? What's the future? The future for Ireland when it comes to immigration. Do you really believe that if we signed up to an EU migration pact, everything would be rosy in the garden?
The future is that the so-called, he must have got an Arctic load of Red Bull delivered to the door, because this energy, you know, I hear about the new Taoiseach that's been asking around for the last 11 years, and now he's full of energy, man, and all
Yeah, well, I can tell you, if things keep going the way they're going, by next week he'll be the old Taoiseach.
I predicted that live in your show, do you remember?
Yeah.
I said he'd be the shortest Taoiseach ever.
Oh, no, I think everybody's predicting that it will be the shortest Taoiseach in the history of Ireland. I think we will end up in a general election very soon. Well, hang on, John. Let me go to Michelle as well. Michelle, hi. How are you doing?
Hi, Nan. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Nice to talk to you too, Michelle. Michelle, the EU Migration Pact is confusing a lot of people because even the ones that we expect, you know, that think this is a good idea, that we're treating people more humanely, et cetera, they're even saying no because they don't want screening and they don't want numbers limited and all that kind of stuff. So everybody's kind of saying no to it. And I'm assuming you are too.
I am, of course. And look, if they learnt nothing from the referendum that happened so crazily that we didn't ask for and we didn't need, they're certainly not learning about this. Like, if you go back to the 4th of December 2023 to the 20th of March, there's 1,907 people that have opted not to stay in IPAS centres, and the government haven't told that, yeah, they get 38 euro a week, but they're getting an extra 75 euro a week on top of that.
That's right, sure.
So if you break that down to the brass tacks, that's 939,000 a month it's costing for these people that haven't opted in. There's 28,000 people now in IPAS centres are waiting to move on. And in the last 2 years, over 100,000 people are in the country. That's twice the population of Galway. The initial agreement going back to this is part of this global citizenship plan for 2030. They want to increase the population in Ireland up to 10 million, which is...
I remember Simon Coveney said that we could comfortably have 10 million people in the country, yeah, at one stage.
You can't. We don't have the resources. The people that are living here and working here and being educated here, they're not able to afford rents. There's no one in their mid-20s to mid-30s want to be living at home with mummy and daddy anymore. They want to go out and start their own families, and there is no option. There's teachers commuting 2 hours to go to school because they can't afford rents. Like, 70% of the homeless people in Ireland were renters, according to Focus Ireland. That's only going to increase. Every county council is under pressure. There's people on housing lists up to 20 years, as you said. Mm-hmm. And as Sharon said, the Dublin 3 regulation is there. It's not being implemented. If you go on to Oireachtas.ie and Leaders Question, Simon Harris has actually said this himself. Well, people haven't been deported because of possible litigation and the cost.
But every time we try to deport somebody, we end up in the High Court. That's costing taxpayers money. And I mentioned the case to Sharon from 2 weeks ago, where we were deporting a man back to the UK. And now the UK seemingly is not a safe country anymore because of the fear of being sent back to Rwanda. So we're in a real stickler, aren't we?
If the Irish government were actually doing their job under the Dublin 3 regulation, like, we know from 2018, there's 5,000 deportation orders that have been issued to people in this country.
Voluntary deportation orders.
Self-deportation orders. And only 15% of them have left. So there's over 4,000 people walking.
But do we even know how many people have left? Because when they asked this question in the Oireachtas before about how many people, they don't keep any record of it. So they don't even know.
They don't know where they are. They don't know what they're doing.
They could be anywhere.
As I said, there's 1,907 people that have come into the country from the 4th of December 23 that are not in IPAS centres. They're getting 38 euro and 80 cent a week plus an additional 75 euro on top of that. Mm. 33% of them are coming in from Nigeria, and over 30% of them are males. And this is a real problem. Every community, every town, I've had people contacting me on my own social media, even from Carrickmacross yesterday, saying, look, we're scared to speak up.
You have a very popular social media, by the way, Michelle Smith.
I do. Yeah. And I'm
over 22 million views, by the way, can I just point out. And I know you're on the documentary tonight on Virgin Media, aren't you, at 9 o'clock? Yeah,
I am. And that was hard for me to do now. It really was. You know, you have people coming at you every angle saying, you know, you're racist and you're this and you don't want anybody in. You know, there has to be some point of common sense.
But here's the problem, my problem with this EU Migration Pact, right? As I said, if you look at RTE, it looks lovely, doesn't it? It's like nice and rosy. Yeah, they might as well put a few pictures of flowers on the page as well. They're selling it as this nice idea that, look, we can now take control of our immigration. We can refuse people and, you know, pay a few quid contribution to Italy and Greece and everyone else to control their borders, right? So we can contribute to take people out of the country, right? But the point of it is, we should be doing that now. We shouldn't be contributing, by the way, but we have a perfect right in this country. We have immigration laws and we have a perfect right to refuse people who don't fit the criteria, you know, somebody who's an asylum seeker or, you know, and that criteria means fleeing from war, persecution or whatever it happens to be. But we're not doing it.
Well, the way I look at it, right, Roderick O'Gorman sent out a social media post as part of this whole council.
I remember that. He denies that, by the way. He denies. He denies that.
Oh, it's up there. It's.
It is up there, but he denies it was for that purpose. What he said, what he's trying to say now is that was just an information piece for people who are already here in different languages. And I'm going, yeah, sure, Roderick, we all believe that.
But the numbers now are actually scary. If you think twice the population of Galway have already come into this country in the last 2 years, like the initial agreement was 3,500 people a year. At 53 people on average a day now coming into the country, you're talking over 19,000 a year. And Roderick O'Gorman stood up after his speech, after Leo Varadkar done his final job to put the nail in the coffin, in his last day as leader of Fine Gael, he decided to push this through. And now the MEPs are going to sit. Do I think they're going to vote for this EU pact? Absolutely. I published an article that I found on gov.ie, and it was there from the 25th of December. 2023, and I only found it on the 25th of March, and I actually sent it to your show as well. Like, this was an overnight decision by the EU, and there's an article there I have it posted where Helen McEntee welcomes the overnight decision of the EU to join Ireland with this 194 member states into this EU pact.
Well, I think it's very important that people are made aware tomorrow to later on today of which MEPs voted for it. And to make sure that they're never re-elected again.
And I think if your listeners even realise, you can go on to the Brussels website and you can see what has been voted for and what our MEPs are actually doing. Like,
I'm shocked by Irish MEPs, MEPs in general, particularly Irish ones, because but the fact that they get voted in, right, and then they disappear. Yeah. And then 4.5 years later, a couple of months ago, they reappear. And they're cutting ribbons to open supermarkets and stupid stuff like that, right? Yeah. Just to show their face because they want to get re-elected again.
Yeah, I was very tempted to run as an MEP this time around, but I don't know if you've seen what happened to me in January when I did decide to stand up for the community here in Ballinrobe especially. You know, there's a lot of hate out there, but you have to put yourself out there. If you're going to represent people, you have to talk up and you have to give people the knowledge. This affects every town, every community, and every generation that's going to come.
And why didn't you run, Michelle, then, if you feel so strongly about it?
I had the fear of God put in me. You'll see, if you watched the documentary last night, like, the people that targeted me for doing the right thing for our community, it took me weeks.
Oh, they target me. And I mean, look, I don't believe I say
they've
anything.
They've plastered my kids on their social media. They've plastered my business. They've plastered, like, I have to look
nasty
after my
people.
Own budget.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is out there, and there's people out there, you just don't know what they're thinking or where they are or what they're going to do, and it is a hard job, but the MEPs, it's worth $1.5 million to each one of them if they get elected, and where are they? You know, where's their videos? Where's their, like, Simon Harris, he's never had a job in his life, he's a college dropout, he got in the 15th count. And there he is now running the country. And
there he is, chauffeur driven with 169,000 pension for the rest of his life and security for the rest of his life and a nice cushy job. Well, stay there, Michelle, because I've loads of people to go to here. I want to go to Pam O'Loughlin as well. By the way, if you want to go to Michelle's TikTok account, you can. Michelle Smith, tax rebate specialist. And she has 22 million views there, by the way. Sorry, I have to go to Sarah. Hang on, Pam. I have to go to Sarah Jane first. Hang on, I do apologise. Sarah, hi, how are you?
How's it going, Niall?
Sarah Jane, you would kind of sign up to this, would you? No? Yes?
No, yes, I don't know. I really don't know that much about it.
But go on.
It wouldn't work, Niall. It just wouldn't work. It's impossible. Like, if you haven't got the priorities straight in our own country, our policies. You know, and now you want to bring in people, you know, safeguarding them. And it's like, what's the same from the frying pan into the fire?
But have you looked at some of the documents that are out this week? I'm looking at one here. This is the government agrees to the new comprehensive accommodation strategy for international protection applicants. Sharon mentioned it, 27th of March. Roderick O'Gorman in it says that a targeted purchase of medium and larger turnkey properties. Now, you know what a turnkey property is. A turnkey property is a house ready to live in. So in other words, for migrants coming into Ireland, they want to purchase a large amount of houses. I mean, There are people on the waiting list in this country 20 years. Are they going to get one of those houses or one of those properties? I don't think so.
Yeah. No, you know the way people say, what is a woman? I think the government, right, has this thing in their head. As long as they have a roof over their house, that they're not homeless. You know what I mean? And I think that's where the government is coming from with this. And it's not giving any of our own stability and any security in regards to their own home, a roof over their head.
Mm-hmm.
And like, our own, like, and I'm not, I hate even saying that word of being racist. Like, I have empathy for any nationality coming in.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't care what.
But we must prioritize. Just say it, Sarah. We must prioritize our own citizens first. Is there anything wrong with saying that?
It's like you have to have your own side of the street clean.
Yes.
Before you can.
But you're not allowed to say that anymore because you're a bloody racist if you say something like that.
Oh,
now.
I'm not racist.
Of course you're not. I'm just saying that's what you get called.
Fact is not racism. Like, will people cop on to that? Like, there's a big difference in the word and there's a big totally two difference in the meaning.
I mean, when you look after everybody and everything, as you said, you keep your own side of the street clean first, well, then you can worry about cleaning the other side of the street. Absolutely. That's the way it works. And that's the way it should work.
Yeah, but Niall, I don't care. They are looking through it through very, very thick eyes. And it is like, we have a beautiful country. Yes. It could be expanded if we had the right resources.
Yeah.
Like, you're talking about bringing people in that, like, with different languages, different cultures.
Yeah.
And I'm sure most of the people are educated.
Yeah.
But you had one of your last speakers saying there, like, that we are sort of a rich country. We're not a rich country. People out there, like, it's mainly, like, middle class.
Well, when they say Ireland is a rich country, they talk about our overall economy and our GDP. But the thing about it is, that doesn't affect your life. Do you understand what I'm saying? It doesn't affect most citizens' lives. Most citizens are skint because the cost of living is so high. But we're rich from a point of view of having a lot of international companies in this country paying a huge amount of tax. So that's why it's kind of false. It's a false economy. We could be broke tomorrow if they all moved out.
But like, for an army family coming in. And, like, women and children, and they're just going to be... And, like, they have to live in humane conditions.
Okay, well, hang on, because I'm rapidly running out of time and I need to go to Pam as well. Pam, hi, how are you?
Hello, how are you?
Sarah. Pam, go ahead. Pam, do you agree with the EU Migration Pact, or does anybody bloody agree with it?
No. God, no. I think it'd be absolute madness to hand over our borders to the EU, to be honest. You know, I think the traffic will all be one way. I mean, the government's shown at the moment they're incapable of deporting anybody who shouldn't be in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And Ireland just appears to sort of accept the dictates from the EU with no pushback whatsoever. I'd love to know what our MEPs are doing for their 12 grand a month over there.
I'd love to know too,
They certainly don't appear to be fighting for Ireland. You're
running for election yourself, by the way. Sorry, so it's Pam O'Loughlin. You're in Ennistymon in County Clare. And you're from the Farmers, you're a candidate for the Farmers Alliance.
I am for the Farmers Alliance, yeah. Mm. So, and, you know, we believe that, you know, we believe in sovereignty and we believe in not handing over basically control of our country to the EU.
But did we not do that? Did we not do that 30 years ago?
Well, I think, but, you know, we're supposed to retain, and, you know, the rules in the EU say that each country retains its ability to sort of, shall we say, customise the dictates that come down from the EU to fit our own country. But Ireland just seems to just adopt everything as it comes down, and we're not pushing back in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have the facilities in this country to take this many people. It's absolute madness to even contemplate it. I mean, there's 27.3 million migrants in the EU at the moment, 27.3 million, and they're still pouring in.
Yeah.
You know, And you know, we're expected to accept a certain amount of migrants based on our GDP, as you said. You know, that GDP is being propped up by
the multinational
countries.
Yeah, who could leave tomorrow.
Now, potentially we could have a change of government very soon, which could up that corporation tax. Those multinationals could go and our GDP would drop by 50%.
Yeah.
So we're at a bit of a knife edge here in Ireland, you know, and we we cannot afford to keep bringing these people in. We've got nowhere to put them, and our own people are being pushed to the side to facilitate this.
But that's the part that's getting to people. And if people dare say anything about that, they're immediately called a racist or they're called some sort of names.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at Rodrigo Gorman's, as I mentioned earlier on, his government's strategy for international protection applicants. And they talk about use of state land for fabricated and modular units, conversion of commercial buildings, targeted purchase of medium and larger turnkey properties. I'm assuming that's houses.
I know.
Design and build of new reception and integration centres and upgrading the IPAS centres. But here's the thing. Even if we signed up to the EU Migration Pact, which I don't believe we should, and even if there was a suggestion that we should build large detention centres at Dublin Airport to fast-track processing for, say, over a seven-day period to refuse people, do you really think we'd get away with that? Because the NGOs would never let it happen.
No, the NGOs will be out in force. And the one thing that does need to happen in this country is there needs to be a major audit and cull in the NGO sector.
Absolutely.
Because we are paying as taxpayers for NGOs who are working against our interests in the main. There are some fantastic NGOs out there, don't get me wrong.
Yep.
But
all 36,000 of them aren't fantastic. and the 6 billion we spend on them is not fantastic. And you're right. Yeah. I mean, a lot of them are not representing the people. They don't represent the people of Ireland. They represent their own personal interests.
And they're making
money. I mean, you know as well as I do, Pam, that immigration in Ireland, like homelessness, like everything else, has become an industry.
It is. And you know, the risk over here in rural Ireland is we rely very, very heavily on tourism over here. You know, tourism and farming, and there are two areas that are being absolutely mullered at the moment by the EU, surprisingly enough. But, you know, we've got a lot of hotels over here that will struggle at certain times of the year, and the hotel owners, you, in a way, couldn't really blame them for taking the apparently unlimited cash that the government have.
There's quite a substantial amount of people getting quite wealthy in this country out of immigration. There's a very small percentage of the population while the rest of us are suffering. Pam, listen, thank you very much. Good luck in the election, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Pam O'Loughlin,
by the way.
Okay, Pam O'Loughlin. She's in Ennistein in North Clare. If you want to vote for her, she's the Farmers' Alliance. So thank you, Pam. Appreciate you coming on. Let me go to Tom. Tom, hi. How are you?
Hi, Niall. How are you?
Good, Tom. First time on the show. Thanks very much for joining us. The EU Migration Pact. Do you know much about it, or are you like most people and quite confused about it?
To be honest with you, Niall, I don't know much about it. I've tried to educate myself a little bit. Mostly I've gone straight to the source, which is the European Commission website.
Yeah.
Have a look at it. And I'm quite concerned. But in fairness, now, your other speakers, they've said pretty much everything there is to say. But there's one point that I'd like to make, which is that I think we're overcomplicating things on purpose, everything on purpose. And if you go back to the very basics, since the Peace of Westphalia in 1648, sovereignty and the control of the borders is the state's most fundamental prerogative, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's also its most fundamental obligation as well. But I think that there's a trend in modern politics to muddy everything, to delegate more and more sovereignty upwards to the EU, which is not a state actor. And in fact, it's actually creating a very comfortable position for politicians to be in, because now they can say, well, really, it's not my fault. My hands are tied. There's nothing I could really do because there is this regulation or this directive or this thing, this piece of supranational legislation that's coming down from on high from the EU, which ties my hands. And it's not my fault.
By the way, isn't that why it's more important now that we have good MEPs in Europe? Because unfortunately, we're stuck with Europe for the moment until such a time as we decide we want to leave or if we want to leave. So it's important that we have individuals over there who are just not going to put their hand up for everything. And I would say that about every country. But I do see in June, when the European elections happen again, I do see a swing back to the centre or the right, indeed, when it comes to European MEPs. So I think that's going to change a little bit. But for the moment, the individuals that we have over there are just yes men.
Absolutely, but the problem is that you ask most people, even myself, I have no idea who the MEP representing me is. I don't know what their stance on anything is. So they've really created this level of actual decision making up in Europe, which is very much insulated from any blowback to what they're actually doing, because the people here at grassroots levels don't actually know what is going on.
Mm.
You get me?
Yeah, no, I absolutely understand you. I do understand what you're saying.
So ultimately, I'm very pissed off with my local representatives, with my, you know, with my TDs and so on and so forth. But the and I'll, you know, I'll try to hold them responsible. But ultimately, they're hiding behind, you know, what I was mentioning before, which is that level of supranational legislation coming down from on high to say that's not my fault.
All right, well, do me a favor, just stay there for a second because I want to go to Bernie as well. By the way, just to let you know that your MEPs there, I'm just looking it up here now. I'm trying to remember which ones are in your area. I'll find it in a second. I just need to. Oh, there you go. Maria Walsh, I think, is in your area, isn't she? Mick Wallace and Grace O'Sullivan. Aren't they the ones from down south? So they you've probably seen them more recently, Tom, because they'll come home after 4.5 years to cut a few ribbons and open a few supermarkets just so they can get your vote again. You know? Let me go to Bernie. Bernie, hi, how are you?
I'm fine, Al. How are you?
Good. Bernie, I mean, a lot of people are quite upset, even at the thoughts of this EU migration pact, for different reasons. Everybody for different reasons. What's your thoughts on it?
I'm really confused and I'm really upset about it when I see the level of, like, the care that we get as Irish people who've, you know, worked and paid our way all our lives and our families before us. And I see how we've been literally cast aside. Like, I mean, I worked, as you know, for over 35 years in the HSE, and I am waiting 2 years for an appointment. And I have sent a letter today to ask me, was I still interested in being on the list? Mm-hmm. And I gave my life, I gave all of my life to that service to make it better. And nobody in my, that I know of today, is getting into a hospital and not having to sit for 3 days on a trolley while they're really ill. Or have been told they can't, they're too far gone because they don't get treatment. Like, why can't we just deal with Ireland at the moment? Ireland, you know, this little island, this little pebble in the middle of the ocean. Why aren't we helping the people who are here? The likes of the mothers and baby home people who are waiting to have somebody listen to them, somebody to deal with them respectfully and deal with the problems they have. Why are we looking to the bigger picture? We're a little island who has enough problems with our own people that need to be addressed first. We are the priority. We are the people who speak.
And that was so. Sarah used the analogy earlier on when she said, "Keep, you know, clean your own side of the street before you look at the other side of the street." And I couldn't disagree with her. And you are right. When we have small little villages which have increased their population by 300 or 400 people suddenly overnight, and you already have a lack of services, including, you know, education for schools, GP services, waiting lists in local hospitals, etc., and then you add another, you know, 20% onto the population in a small rural town, well, then that's going to cause a huge problem.
Yeah, but it's causing a huge problem to the bigger village, which is Ireland. Mm-hmm. Like, the problem's already there. You can't go anywhere. Where do you go on this island at this moment? You can't go to any hotels. You can't go to any bed and breakfast. Places that were run down are now being taken over by, you know, people making money because they kept the building idle, and now all of a sudden the buildings are being filled overnight with people. Yeah. Like, why is it such a secret? Why can't we sit down with the people in the country, call meetings in all our villages and say, this is what the country is at the moment. Our MEP should come back on the streets and walk amongst us and tell us what they're doing for us.
But they're useless. But they're a useless bunch.
Yeah, well, then stop paying them. Why are we paying them? Like, why are we paying huge salaries to the likes of all those TDs when they don't deserve a penny of it at the moment? If anything, they should be made to work for free. They should sign up on the dole every freaking day that they do something right for us, let them be paid. If they don't do anything right, take the money off them. Mm.
What was your feeling yesterday when you saw Simon Harris being announced the new TD?
I nearly vomited.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, that's how sick in my stomach I am.
It's kind of like out of the frying pan and into a fire, isn't it?
Yeah, promising all this, I'll get the kids out of the bedrooms. What an insult to us people who are trying. We paid for everything. Like, now, you never got free education. Did I get free education? No, we didn't. For our third level, I mean.
Yeah.
I couldn't even dream to aspire to become anything because I couldn't go to college. I couldn't afford it. My parents couldn't afford it.
Speaking of, you know, the past generations, you obviously, and I know you think a lot of your grandchildren, I mean, what do you think the future holds? I mean, and we talked about this last year, and I remember you kind of got a bit upset about it, but your view obviously hasn't, I don't believe, has changed. The future for your grandchildren in Ireland, does it worry you?
It's, It does worry me. Every day I wake up, I mean, I hope I don't die, that I can't do something right before I die, that I can't give something back to my grandchildren that I'm actually proud of. Because at this moment in time, I'm not proud of anything. Even though I worked my whole off, and everyone that I know, and I'm not talking about myself personally, everyone I know within my friendship, you know, who I'm friends with, everyone is devastated. And they're terrified about what we're leaving for our future generations to tea with. Never mind all this myth. But like, we already had debt from when the economy collapsed. Like, where's all that magically disappeared to?
Do me a favour, stay there, Bernie. And I know Anthony is with you. If he wants to say something, by the way, he's welcome to come on there, Anthony.
He's not here.
Stay there for a second, Bernie. Let me go to Malachy Steenson as well before I wrap up today. Malachy, hi, how are you?
Good afternoon, Lars.
Good afternoon, Malachy. A lot of criticism of European MEPs today that they're not doing enough, that we only see them every 4.5 years when they come back to cut a ribbon in a supermarket to get re-elected again. A lot of criticism of the government and the NGOs, of course. By the way, the NGOs equally don't want to sign this EU migration pact because they think it's unfair on immigrants and unfair on asylum seekers to even attempt to screen people or put them in detention centres. So they don't agree with it either.
No, well, I mean, they want open borders. And as you say, the NGO industry, you know, relies on all of these problems in society, whether it's the immigration problem, whether it's the homeless problem, or whether it's any other issue. They just milk the system and become lobbyists and, you know, get more and more money, and the problems get worse and worse.
Yeah, and just call everybody else so racist.
The vast bulk of the NGOs are not worth a damn. And you see, I mean, even Yaman Skeen on Virgin Media the other night talked about the duplication of services and all of that. You know, yet he was the head of one of these NGOs himself, or a housing association, things that should have never been set up. I mean, there are, I think, 25 housing associations in Dublin dealing with social housing. The previous situation was that the city council dealt with social housing. And they got rid of this. They took it away from the council in order to reduce costs. Now, nobody will tell me that 25 different agencies doing what one agency used to do reduces costs, because every one of these housing associations, then they keep telling you they're not for profit. They're not for profit because they don't have a shareholder. That doesn't mean they don't make money. It doesn't mean that they don't pay their CEO and their board hundreds of thousands a year to run the system.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with this country. And when they talk about Ireland...
Sorry for interrupting. There's a conflict of interest. If you have a housing agency, which is an NGO, there's a conflict of interest because they don't really want to solve the housing crisis. Because if they do solve the housing crisis, they're out of business.
And when people say, you know, the system in Britain where you get honours from the Queen and that OBEs and MBEs and all of these things, and that we don't have a system to reward people here. We do. We put them onto state boards or we put them onto NGOs and we pay them vastly more. I mean, if you've got an OBE or an MBE in Britain, you don't get any payment for it. But in Ireland, you don't get an MBE, but you get a job worth 100 grand for the rest of your life. And then you go around prostituting yourself around different NGOs from one to the other. Solving,
okay,
you know,
well, look, finally, because I don't have much time, this, the EU Migration Pact, is there anything attractive about it?
Well, I mean, the attractive bits are detention centres and, you know, deporting people.
But we could do that right now. There's nothing stopping us doing that right now, is there?
There's nothing to stop them doing it, no. And the reality is, even if they did sign, well, they will sign up to this, this doesn't come into effect for a couple of years. So the good bits will be the last bits that will ever come into effect, if they do. But you had at the same time O'Gorman announcing that he was going to buy up everything he could.
No, I've seen that. I have the paper there.
Provide,
turnkey places per year. Yeah.
You know, now, what does that do? If you have the government in the market buying up houses, which is what he's talking about, or anything, apart
for
from
refugees
that comes along,
yeah,
right? That drives up the price. Simple supply and demand economics. You cannot, on one hand, say you want
but
to...
But why are they doing it? These people... I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't like O'Gorman at all. There's nothing I like about him. But he is an intelligent man, I assume. So surely he can see, or his department that he delegates to.
No,
surely they can see the problem behind what they're doing.
Well, don't be confusing intelligence with somebody who's gone to university, for instance. People think in this country that if you go to third level university and you do a stupid degree in economics or politics, that you can actually run the country. They can have all degrees, although Simple Simon doesn't even have that. You can have all the degrees you want, but anybody who comes out of the universities in this country and in Western Europe in general now, have been created and indoctrinated into woke liberalism. And they all, I don't even know if they can, if they actually believe what they're saying most of the time, because it beggars belief that people can believe the things that they believe. But they continue to push, and they all get jobs in the system. And remember, the first people that Simple Simon appointed were more PR people. He sees this as a PR exercise. And, you know, you listen to his speech there at his Ardesh the other day. You know, I'm sure Benjamin Netanyahu was quaking in his boots when he looks at Simple Simon saying that, you know, basically, I can't remember the exact things, but, you know, rather than shouting at Netanyahu, who
What got me in the Ardesh was he went on numerous occasions talking about the fact, with this kind of admission, that they haven't been listening, but now they are, right? They're listening to the people. They're this new energy, and they're listening to the people. And then yesterday, he decides, let's keep Helen McEntee as the Minister for Justice. So they're clearly not listening to the people at all.
Well, all of the things that you know, he listed out then, if only he had been in government for the past 12 years. You know, like, he comes in there as if he was somebody who was sitting outside on the pretend opposition even and looking at this. He's been a senior member of government, and the man shouldn't be sent to run a bath, never mind to run a country or a government department. You know, are we, and people complain, you know, they put up barriers around Merrion Square yesterday.
Yeah, I've seen them. I was there. Yeah, I've seen them there.
When there was not going to be any protest, but it shows the fear that they have of the people.
It was actually, I was there. I was in the area yesterday, and I seen all the barriers, and I was saying there was nobody there. There was actually nobody there, really. Okay, apart from a few tourists and what have you, right? Who could, by the way, which was quite shocking.
They were wandering around bewildered.
Bewildered as to why they weren't allowed to walk up and take a picture of government buildings. They had the whole area, including the road that Buswell's is on there, the whole back at Merrion Square, all completely blocked off with these steel barriers. And there was nobody trying to get near us.
You know, you have them all talking, and you'd Ryan rabbiting on about climate change, and we had to reduce car travel and all of that. Why didn't they go on a bus? You know, you had a whole fleet of cars going up.
Oh, yeah. BMW 7 Series, by the way, can I point out.
Without, right. I mean, there's something fundamentally wrong in this country. But
unfortunately, I have to wrap it up anyway. But in relation to the EU Migration Pact, you're saying no. And by the way, you can say I know all you want, but we've got European MEPs over there today. They're all going to stick their hand up and say
yes. Hopefully those Euro MEPs will be replaced in June by people like myself, who actually have the interests of this country at heart, and people who believe in this nation, and people who believe that we have a right to determine our own destiny without influence from previously Britain, now the EU, or indeed America, or anybody else. If we're going to make mistakes in this country, let them be our own mistakes. Let us destroy this country ourselves if we want to do that, rather than be dictated to by other people. But we will be having Niall, and I just want to flag this because we'll be giving more details on this later. There will be two major rallies in this city against current government policy prior to the local and European elections, and we will have massive numbers of people, just as we had in February, on the 5th of February, when we had almost 5,000 people on the streets of Dublin, and which the state was rocked by, despite what they say. This is why they tried to ram us down and create a riot.
Okay, just very quickly, Malachy, when are those dates?
Well, I'm not going to reveal those dates yet because, you know.
Okay. Well, you can keep us up to date on it.
Some people will know, but there will be two, and people can work out the dates nearly themselves. But we don't want to give our enemies ammunition, and our enemies now encompass the whole media class almost, the whole political and NGO class, and the whole European class, because we are a nation now, Niall, at war, and nobody be under any illusions what we are actually fighting for. We're fighting now for the survival of this nation.
Okay, listen, Malachy Steenson, thank you very much indeed, and I appreciate you coming on the air. Now, thank you to everybody who got Robin for the show. Some of your messages, by the way, coming in. Tony said that we should opt out as soon as possible and start mass deportations of all criminal and economic migrants posing as refugees and repatriation of individuals who never should have been given entry in the first place. We should opt out like Denmark, which is working. Enough is enough. It's unsustainable to continue the way we are. Why are we... We are only an island, says Bella. Brussels has you by the scruff of the neck. Therefore, you ain't opting out of anything, says Liam. Brian said, well, this is why we talked about European MEPs. We need strong European MEPs. Brian Cooper says, Ireland must not sign this pact. Denmark will not sign it for very important reasons they're unhappy with. Our sovereignty is once again at stake and much more. Stop it, Fine Gael. Thank you very much indeed for everybody who got involved in the show. By the way, don't forget, as usual, you can go online and make a donation or you can subscribe to the show. Please do. I've got to do a Bob Geldof. We need your money now. There's never Bob Geldof to turn Live Aid. No, genuinely. We have bills to pay and we need money. We don't advertise, as you can see. We don't have advertising on the screen or anything like that because we don't want to be at the behest of an advertiser telling us what we can and can't talk about. So we rely solely on any donations we get to the show. So if you feel you can donate €5, €100, €500, €5 million, please go to our website, nileboylan.com. We would really appreciate it. Or if you can, subscribe. Monthly subscription, $5.99 plus tax. And that's basically just covers costs. We don't get paid. There's three of us working on the show. We don't get paid for doing it. So please do support the show. Thank you very much indeed. We shall join you again tomorrow at 12.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.